And one thing I will say, our legal department asks me to make a disclaimer every time I speak that anything I say today is really just my opinion. It's not what our company stands. And I know we've got some people from my company here that are documenting very closely what I say. So I'll do my very best to be politically correct. And for some of you out there that know me personally, this will be fun. what I want to do is start off with some things we learned over the past spring and things we learned throughout this summer so far. As just an industry of fertilizer, when I was asked to speak, I was asked to speak about what's going on in the world fertilizer situation. And I guess what I want to do is just start out by recapping a little bit of where we are today. One of the things we learned once the corn crop finally got planted this spring is that we as an industry say we can't, but we've proven we can do things on a just-in-time basis, JIT. And by that I mean, we maybe don't have all of our fertilizer plants full. We maybe have allocations at pipelines. It is difficult to do. It is stressful from people on our end, but for many of you that farm, I don't believe you actually saw all the stresses that happen logistically trying to provide that just in time. We learned that we did. It's very, very challenging. One thing about the ag retail system today, they are driven specifically on the nitrogen front, but other fertilizers as well, to end empty. Everyone wants to hit that bullseye. They want to sell every ton they have in their shed because if any of you remember, 08 company like CHS lost $100 million with inventory devaluation. So ag retailers want to make sure that they end empty. What that does is put continued pressure on the logistics and the just-in-time. And a couple of things that aren't on my slide that I really want to talk about that are crucial to that just-in-time inventory is, can we continue to do that? And have you, any of you been stuck in road construction this summer? Okay. I sat for 25 minutes waiting for a pilot car south of Bellevue on a county road the other day, and I thought, this is absolutely insane. Anybody else been on that road? It's crazy. The reason I say that is the frustration that we feel when we sit in summer road construction in Iowa is similar to what we're going to see potentially happening on the Mississippi River right now. Anybody remember what river levels were a year ago on the Mississippi River? Yeah, we were like 50 feet in Memphis higher than we are today. Okay? So what that's really doing is causing huge problems with our barge transit. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, getting fertilizer by barge to this market is essential. Without it, we will not have enough fertilizer to put the crop in the ground. You know, I spent some time on a pleasure craft this week. And for those of you that don't know, I was boating, drinking beer on the Mississippi. And we got an opportunity to lock through a couple locks, and it was very interesting to speak to the gentlemen there that were running the locks. They're running 24/7. It takes about 2 hours from when a barge wants to go in to when they come out of the lock, and they're really struggling to keep that river at that 9 foot in the channel that they hope to. So they really are having struggles. So what that's happening is barge companies are not able to push 15 barges up at a time. They're lightening the loads. So instead of getting a 1,500-ton dry barge, we may get a 1,200-ton dry barge. So you can see what I'm saying. It's going to put a little bit more pressure on that. They're also saying it could take an additional, from NOLA to St. Paul, Minnesota, could be an up to additional 2 weeks of transit time. So that gets very, very critical, and I wanted to bring that to everyone's attention as we look at the logistical challenges we face not only for this fall, but as we move into that spring as well. Combination of those factors, we talked about the just-in-time and the logistics, will continue to intensify volatility, and I'll speak about volatility. I'll probably say it 100 times before this is done, but this market that we live in is extremely volatile. We have a highly dysfunctional supply chain today. There's a huge disconnect between what the manufacturers of the fertilizer want and do in their business and what the grower sees and understands. And I would tell you this, there's an absolute lack of concern for the American farmer and how they grow their business, how they run their business, because if those producers of fertilizer haven't, and by the way, we are not basic in fertilizer production, so I'm not like, don't, where's the blood in the water guy, right? But the companies that we supply, that supply fertilizer worldwide, if they have an opportunity to ship that product overseas, they're going to do that before they're going to leave it here in the U.S. Even with low gas prices, we see the manufacturer does not want to have any risk. Wholesalers do not want to have any risk. And guess what? Ag retailers don't want to have any risk. So who holds the risk? How many of you farm in here? Okay, so we've heard the word risk and we've heard volatility. Really what it boils down to is, you farmers, we're going to ask you to sell your grain and then in turn lock in your highest priced inputs. That's really what we're trending towards, because if we don't do that, we're going to struggle to make sure that we have product in place at the time that you need it. So we really need to have the farmer tie his crop inputs directly with the crop acre. We say that some of the retailers we work with do an exceptional job of knowing and understanding what their farmer clientele are going to need. Our opinion is those that do that and those farmers that work directly with their retail and planning for their input needs will be the ones that will be successful long term. A couple of other things quickly as we move forward. Production can be pulled away quickly in our system. If you look at some of the things that have happened domestically, I'll skip over the potash, but if you look into the DAP production, really what's happened with U.S. DAP production is it's been getting shipped overseas and we're not attracting import tonnage to the U.S. You know, Barrett spoke about the equipment. You know, spring is a 10-day event anymore. And it really, once it starts, it's a full sprint for 10 days to get everything done. And I'm going to comment, it's not on my slide, but fall is the same way. I will tell you, a few years ago, we harvested early, and by September 15th, customers of mine that had bought October, November barges of fertilizer were barking at the door wanting their fertilizer. Why? So they could get ahead of the game. We say that the cash ton business is really very small in the spring, and it's really very small in the fall. A lot of these large fertilizer sheds that are in the country today are, you know, being filled up and being planned far ahead. So, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we sold a lot more prompt cash tons. Now so much more is being done ahead of the game. Where are we at today? Everybody always wants to hear somebody talk about the projection of what the futures markets are going to do for fertilizer. Well, you're not going to get any answers out of me. Basically, though, I will comment on a few things happening worldwide. On phosphates, we continue to see that Latin America has continued to firm. NOLA pricing in the U.S. stays firm. We've moved up about $50 since spring with very little imports planning to come into the country. If you look at the market overall, there really are low inventories on phosphates. And if I have retail customers of mine that come to me today and want to buy barges of fertilizer on phosphates, it's going to be late September or October before those barges arrive. And remember what I started my presentation with about the river? That's assuming it rains at some point in the Ohio River Valley or Minnesota or somewhere to get some water in the river, because we could continue to see challenges there as well. We do think, though, on the phosphate market specifically, with the drought concerns, we do feel that the buying will be slightly tempered, which could, though, in turn provide a little bit of strength in the market. Touching quickly on phosphates, spring demand was a little bit stronger than forecasted, and when you look around, most of my retailers that I worked with emptied out their warehouses. Our supply chain at the end of the spring season was as empty as it had ever been. All the way from, I had the opportunity a year ago to spend some time in Canada and go through a potash mine. They had a 5-football field long warehouse of potash at the time that I was there a year ago. Guess how much was in there? Anybody got a guess? 6,500 tons, just enough to fill a unit train for Vancouver to be shipped to Brazil. Nothing to come to the U.S. Now, that picture has changed, and that they have built up the potash inventories. But still, Canpotex, that ships product overseas, has its strongest second quarter, and it continues to say exports will be strong on potash. So what does that mean for us? The big potash companies out of Canada on Saturday announced a $20 price increase. We'll see if that'll hold, because it is tempered a little bit by Israeli potash and other potash that comes in from Russia, but we'll see if that potash price will hold. We do see that buying has picked up, mostly on fear that we won't be able to get everything positioned where we need to be, because for all intents and purposes, how many days away is fall? So we're seeing that guys are filling up on the retail level for that. Couple of things quickly on urea. CHS is the largest importer of urea. I'm gonna scan through these slides, because you guys all kept us on time, and it's not gonna be me that keeps us off time. But I'm going to scan through the urea just a little bit. Like I said, CHS is the largest importer of urea domestically. We do import about 70% of the urea that's used on farm acres in the U.S. We import as a country. So it's interesting to see the volatility of that. You know, NOLA price peaked over $700 in the spring. We've dropped back down to a much more manageable level. Finally, and it's not in my slide because it changed, I would say, late last week, we've recently bottomed, and we've seen significant buying for those customers in the Northwest Iowa, Southern Minnesota markets, and even the Dakotas that actually apply their urea in the fall. And we've also seen significant buying from retailers to get their products covered. And like I said, it says the conclusion is that fill happened in mid-July. And we believe retailers should hold what they can hold before the river closes. A couple of big things on international urea demand, and I'll have a couple slides about it later. I just can't cover the whole world market situation in the next 7 minutes. I know that. But things internationally that I find really interesting about the urea market is that it's really the buyers have an upper hand. And I want you to think, when you think of urea production worldwide, you really need to think about China, and you really need to think about the Arab Gulf. That's where the majority of the product is coming from. And China can make or break our destiny when it comes to the urea market, whether they decide to export or not. And they do that by tax. The government will decide if they're going to put an export tax on or not, and that makes a big difference. A couple other things, because I want to make sure I speak about the OCI plant coming potentially to Scott County, so I'm going to squeeze through on the urea and slip to UAN. We can, as a country, produce as much UAN as we typically need to grow a crop. We continue to see additions to our supply. PCS at their Geismar plant in Oklahoma will add another 800,000 ton. We continue to see imports that are up 2.5 million or so last year. The system, for all intents and purposes, is empty. I have 35,000 tons of storage at a plant that I manage at Muscatine, Iowa. We have 0 tons in our tank, with barges slated to come late August and September. So it's an interesting game to play with a system that's very empty, because just as soon as harvest is here, what do we take? Christmas and Valentine's Day, and we start planting corn. So it's going to be interesting trying to get everything in place for that 2013 crop. The other thing that's interesting on UAN specifically, and that's why I want to make sure I take time to speak to the OCI potential investment in Scott County, is there's a very few companies, and Governor Branstad speaks about it in an article from our hometown paper, but basically there's very few. You know, CF Industries holds 65% control of the market and 99% control of the barges on the river. So on any given day, I can't necessarily go to the market and buy UAN. So we'll address that a little bit later as we go on. Couple of things on the ammonia market. Everybody likes to know what's going on in ammonia, because for all intents and purposes, ammonia is, was, and probably will be the cheapest price for unit of N. Overall, international pricing seems tight and supplies seem tight. We think there's still a chance for a good fall. Now, the question I keep getting posed from my friends that are agronomists is, how big of a fall will you have if you can't get the knives in the ground, right? I mean, so we're going to have some moisture in order to make that happen. You know, originally, we ended the spring season empty, and farmers were, or the retailers were waiting to fill, waiting to hear if the farmers were going to buy any nitrogen. At the point that maybe 2 weeks ago, many farmers decided it was time to buy, time to lock in some things, and so we started seeing fill happen. We say continued firm prices as we look through fall, and like I said before, so goes the corn market, so goes nitrogen. So if we see continued strength in corn, we will see continued strength into the nitrogen markets.